Okay, thanks again everyone for joining us today. We're going to go ahead and get started. So if you're seeing this slide today, our audio has started. There's two options to do either computer audio or phone audio. You will be muted for the duration of this presentation, but are able to write in any questions in the questions box. My name is Hillary Hartley, and I'm the Assistant Director for Fulbright Student and Scholar Programs in the Western Hemisphere, and I'm joined today by my colleague, who I'll let introduce herself.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining. My name is Andel Pisana, and I'm the Program Officer on the Western Hemisphere U.S. Scholar Program.
And we also will have a Fulbright alum who went to Mexico recently, Dr. Brian Klopotek, who will be speaking in just a couple of moments, and we'll give him the opportunity to introduce himself. This webinar will be recorded and posted on our CIES website, so if you miss a portion or want to revisit some information, you will have the opportunity to do so. So I'd like to begin our presentation by talking just a little bit about what the Fulbright program is. The Fulbright program actually just celebrated its 70th anniversary a few years ago, and it was established to strengthen the relationships between the people of the United States and citizens of the rest of the world. It's sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and is administered by the Institute of International Education's Council for International Exchange of Scholars. We have the pleasure of administering this program since its inception and look forward to work with it in years to come. So just to give you a visual of what Fulbrighters are, and I think it's important to note that anyone has the potential to be a Fulbrighter depending on the program that they're interested in. But as you can see to date, there have been almost 400,000 awards granted. And we've had some very prestigious participants, including Nobel laureates, Pulitzer Prize winners, MacArthur Fellows, and Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients. We also count among our alumni many heads of state or government. One of our most recent heads of state was Manuel Santos, the President of Colombia, was a Fulbrighter. The U.S. Scholar Program awards approximately 800 grants annually. And we have about 125 countries that U.S. scholars can go to, but throughout the Fulbright program, over 160 countries participate in one form or another. So to talk just a little bit about the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, it supports teaching and or research from 3 to 12 months. The style of award varies considerably by country. As I mentioned previously, there are programs active in 125 countries, including Mexico, the country that we're going to focus on today. The awards are open to all disciplines. Angelica will shortly go over the structure of the awards in Mexico, and it is important in the case of Mexico that you are applying to the award that best matches your profile professionally and your academic profile. All Fulbright applicants for the U.S. Scholar Program are expected to apply to a specific award with a proposed project. We are not going to ask you to do teaching, you know, at X university. You are going to propose the project that you want to undertake in the country to which you are applying. There are a variety of host institutions that you will see. In Mexico, we have some awards that are placed, meaning that the commission will ultimately make the final placement, often in conjunction with the Secretary of Public Education in Mexico, or you can propose a host in many cases with a higher education institution in Mexico. One really important change this year is a shift in the application deadline. Based on your feedback, the feedback of applicants, alumni, and our colleagues in the countries abroad, we have pushed back the application deadline to September 15th. This year, that happens to land on a weekend day, so it will be September 16th. So this gives you about 6 extra weeks to put together a really strong application and hopefully be very successful. So to be eligible for the U.S. Scholar Program, you must be a U.S. citizen at the time of application. Unfortunately, you're not able to apply as a U.S. permanent resident. You must be a U.S. citizen. You must also meet the degree requirements as required by the award. Angelica will discuss the exceptions to the PhD requirement in Mexico. There's a few awards where a PhD may not be required. Awards that are open to applicants with master's and or professional experience, they'll be expected to have a certain amount of experience in order to really be the appropriate applicant for this program. If you just recently graduated with your master's degree and don't have a whole lot of professional experience, the student program may in fact be more appropriate for you. The program is open to professionals and artists outside of academia who have recognized standing and substantial accomplishments. Mexico has a really rich tradition of funding grantees in the arts, so I think that's something that's really important to note. We also strongly encourage applicants who have previously served in the U.S. military. Teaching experience may be required by the award. It's important to read the catalog awards very carefully and understand what the award that you're applying for is looking for. Finally, in recent years, we've had some changes to the policy on previous Fulbright Scholar grants and waiting periods between grants. If you are a previous Fulbrighter, a previous U.S. Scholar Fulbrighter, you do need to wait 2 years from the completion of your core award, and 2 years from the date of completion, you may apply for another core U.S. Scholar Award. If you previously held a U.S. student grant, that does not count against you if you're applying for the U.S. Scholar Award. And if you're a specialist, there are some special provisions that allows you to apply for a U.S. core award. We encourage you to consult those policies and really understand them. So at this time, we would like to invite our alumni guest, Brian, to speak a little bit about his experience. And we'll go ahead and turn over the mic to him and allow him to introduce himself and talk about his Fulbright.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Klopotic, and as you can see here, I was a Fulbrighter last year. My particular Fulbright was a teaching Fulbright, and so I was a U.S. Studies chair for one semester at Universidad de las Americas in Puebla. And I was also working on my research project, which is, see the title there, and it deals with the ways that Indian identity is constructed in the U.S. and Mexico and how that affects people here and there, here in the U.S. and there in Mexico. So I absolutely loved my time there. I was there from December 2017 until June of 2018. There were a couple of, there's a lot of work that goes into making everybody, or giving a lot of orientation towards the year in Mexico through orientation events in August and then a mid-year event that's put on by the Fulbright program in Mexico. And so you'll be connected with about 100 other people who are also there on Fulbrights, some of them professors, some of them graduate students, some of them recent graduates from an undergraduate degree. And those are very helpful. I'll tell you my experience. One reason I applied for the U.S. Studies teaching position was that I don't know if the Angelica and Hillary can comment on this anymore, but it doesn't require the same kind of institutional sponsorship and being a relative newbie to the field of Mexican indigeneity. I didn't have those connections at institutions already, so that was helpful. But I found in my teaching, the students there that I worked with were incredibly engaged. Most of them were also strong English speakers. The classes I taught, they asked me to speak in English in those classes. This is, you know, as a Fulbrighter, you're also part of the goal of the program is diplomatic, or a central part of the goal of the program is diplomatic, and so it's about teaching about the U.S., and that doesn't mean, like, in glorified terms. You know, I talk about Native American studies, and anybody who's talking about Native studies as in a way that glorifies the U.S. is not doing it right. But to be able to talk about those things is very important. So the students I also found were very engaged and welcoming at UDLAP, which is a private university. But I taught in the anthropology department. The students invited me on various field trips, and the faculty as well. They had a fogata, bonfire, a welcoming bonfire that was really nice. We went to various places in Mexico with the students. So we climbed El Popo, the giant mountain volcano, with the pueblo of Xalicintla, and walked up there with them, and it's like, you know, at 16,000 feet or something. So that was a memorable part of the experience, but there are opportunities while you're there to go places all over. Some of those are sponsored by Fulbright itself in that mid-year event and in the orientation. So we went to Xochimilco, we went to Oaxaca, we went to Veracruz, we went to Puebla, well, of course we were in Puebla, and as my family, some of those were with just my family, and some were with the Fulbright program itself. So in terms of, you know, the experiences in Mexico, I mean, there's a lot of information in the media about it being very violent, there are those elements that people talk about, but I never at any point felt endangered there, and I was there with my wife and my four sons, who are, at the time they were aged 13, 14, 15, and 16, and, you know, it's we never felt endangered, but we also weren't being foolish and walking around solo at night and things like that. So I had you know, there are things that I'll tell you about my family. I'll tell you a couple of things. The kids 100% would do it again. They absolutely loved it. They were in a bilingual school, which had its ups and downs. Because most of the students there spoke English to them to make it easy. So the kids didn't learn as much Spanish as they could have otherwise. But there was that. After the semester was over of teaching in English at UDLAP, I also taught for a month in the Programa de Liderazgo para Jóvenes Indígenas, which is sponsored by the U.S. Embassy and by UDLAP itself. It's the Indigenous Youth Leadership Program, but it's for Native students from the U.S. and Mexico. It's predominantly for Native students from Mexico, but they have, so 30 slots for them, 5 slots for students from the U.S. and Canada, and 5 slots for Native students from elsewhere in Latin America. And so that was a really important and informative and helpful connection and feeling that I participated in there. And the students, I'll say again, were you know, very welcoming, as well as my colleagues in the department that I was at. So in terms of research, I've made connections, some unexpected connections that I didn't anticipate. So you know, my project is working on actually on federal recognition of a tribe in the United States that has ancestry, indigenous ancestry from both sides of the shifting U.S. and Mexico border. And I did, you know, make some progress on that, but I also changed plans as I was there. So rather than going to the National Archives in Mexico City, I taught this class with the Indigenous Youth Leadership Program, which actually provided other kinds of research and writing opportunities. So I'm working on a co-authored piece with one of my colleagues from UDLAP that we plan to publish in English and in Spanish in a U.S. journal and in a Mexican journal. So it was, overall, it was a great experience and really expanded my understanding of Mexico, of the U.S., of race and indigeneity in both places, and so I strongly recommend it to anybody.
Thank you so much, Brian. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off as you were so going, but I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that Brian said. One being about bringing your family, I think that's really fantastic. And Mexico is one of a handful of countries in the Western Hemisphere that offers additional financial benefits based on the number of dependents that you have accompanying you during your program. So, you know, we want the Fulbright program to be possible for you both, you know, professionally and academically, but we understand that you can't, you know, necessarily leave spouses and children at home easily, and we want you to be able to experience this with your family. So I think that that's really important. I also, what you said about the fact that you didn't necessarily have connections prior to arriving in Mexico, I think that that's one of the great things about the U.S. Studies Award and the TEFL Award, which Angelica will talk about just a little bit. It's a really great opportunity for those scholars that may be looking to broaden networks without, and go on a Fulbright to do so. And then finally, I really like what you said about flexibility. A lot of Fulbrighters will tell us what they sort of plan to do and then what happens once they get on the ground. And part of being a Fulbrighter is, you know, being flexible and culturally adaptive. So that resonates a lot with what we've heard from a lot of our other Fulbrighters. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we move on to highlight the awards? Brian will also be on during questions and answers.
I'll defer, just wait and see if anyone has any questions that I can answer at the end. But, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Okay. So before Angelica dives right into our awards and highlights them, I just wanted to let everyone know that about 2 or 3 years ago, Mexico reorganized their awards. They used to be in sort of two large baskets of social sciences and humanities and STEM and the Bordeaux program, but now they have really focused it to make it more adaptable for all scholars. So we're hopeful that you can find an award in these 7 that will work well for you. I do want to highlight that STEM and TEFL are priorities for Mexico, and really encourage you to consider applying to Mexico if this is your field of study. And with that, I'll turn it over to Angelica.
Great. Thank you, Hillary. So I'm going to dive in to each of the 7 awards that Hillary just mentioned. But first, I'd like to do a quick demo of the catalog of awards. So if you give me 1 second, I'm just going to switch over the screen. All right, so here we have the catalog of awards main screen, which I hope you have all seen or explored a little bit. But if not, I'll just give you a quick demo of how to utilize it and be able to really maximize your search in terms of the Fulbright Scholar Program. So you can search regionally if you want. We would be in the Western Hemisphere here. Because this is a Mexico-specific webinar, I'm going to go directly to Mexico. And this will show us all of the awards available for Mexico. So we have this grid view here. You can also switch it to the list view, which is how I like to look at it.
And so it gives you a nice little snapshot of the 7 different awards, the country, and then the activity. So you'll see here there's the options for research, teaching and research combination, or like the award that Dr. Kopatek was referring to is teaching only. And then we have one special one that I'll talk about a little bit later, that's a multi-country award. So you can click into each one and it'll give you the details. So let's look at the TEFL, Teaching English as a Foreign Language Award. So here, the first thing that you should know that some people tend to miss, we have 4 tabs here. And so each of them is going to contain a different amount of information that's relevant to this specific award. So over here on the right, we have the number of grants available. So for the Teaching English as a Foreign Language Award specifically, there's up to 5 awards, grants that can be given for this specific thematic area. It's teaching and teaching research. It gives you the category, the degree requirements, et cetera. Here is my name, my information, in case you wanted to reach out. We definitely encourage you to reach out with any specific questions, concerns you may have, and we can help you with that. And it gives you the grant activity, the purpose, the link, et cetera. And then in the award requirements, there's just a few more details about whether or not a letter of invitation should be sought, what kinds of language requirements. Mexico does have a language requirement for all of their awards, but to differing levels. So for this one specifically, it's advanced Spanish fluency is recommended. That's a strong recommendation. And so you'll see here. So then there's the award benefits. This is just more information, and then country area overview, which can give you some important information about Mexico, Fulbright Mexico. COMEXIS is the organization, the commission in Mexico. And there's travel warnings, etc. So I will switch back over to the PowerPoint. And then I can go award by award with all the important details of it. Okay. Great. So we have 7 awards, as we mentioned. The first one that I'd like to discuss, this one is the García Robles Postdoctoral Scholar Award. So this, the postdoc award, there are up to 4 grants. It's research or a combination of teaching and research for 3 to 9 months. And the important thing to note here is that it is a postdoc. So your PhD should have been conferred within the past 3 years. There may be some flexibility for another year or 2 beyond that, but generally the rule is within 3 years. And this is really meant to give you the professional development and establish connections that you may not have early on in your career. So there is open to many disciplines, but there is a handful of preferred disciplines: agriculture, biological sciences, chemistry. The list is here for you, and as Hillary mentioned, because STEM is a priority in the region, we definitely encourage anyone in the STEM field to be applying for this award. And then the language requirement, it's intermediate Spanish required, and so you'll be submitting a language evaluation, a self-evaluation to indicate that you are proficient. So the next award, this is the U.S. Studies Chair, and this is the one that Brian was referring to that he went on last spring. So this award has up to 4 grants. It's teaching only. And so it's the U.S. Studies Chair, and you will be placed at one of the following 4 universities. So you should not be seeking a letter of invitation. You can indicate your preference, if you would like, of which which university you would like to be at, but COMEXIS will make the final placement decision.
Intermediate Spanish is recommended just to be able to live in Mexico and work and really engage with your colleagues. But as Brian referred to, teaching is in English. And an important thing to note here is that a variety of specializations related to U.S. studies are welcome. So it's not limited to just history, political science, law, but really anything that can increase the collaboration and knowledge of the students in Mexico of the United States. So the next one, this is the Scholar of Border Program. This is a really unique award. There's one grant available, and it's teaching, research, or a combination of both. And the really unique aspect about this award is that you must be located in a border state in the United States and be working with a host institution in a border Mexican state. And so you're eligible if you're based in California, Arizona, New Mexico, or Texas. And you must secure an affiliation with a Mexican university on the other side. So with the exception of Tamaulipas, you can go to Baja California Norte, Sonora, Chihuahua, Coahuila, and Nuevo León. One thing to note here is that you will need to adhere to State Department travel warnings, so keep those in mind if you're going to apply to this award. This is also one of the only awards in which you won't actively live in the host country. You'll stay in the United States, but you'll be traveling to Mexico to your host institution a minimum of 8 days per month to conduct your research or teaching and or a combination of both. And again, for this, it's an intermediate level of Spanish that is required, and a letter of invitation is strongly preferred. So this is a really interesting award, and there is only one, but we highly encourage you to apply for that one. Next, we have the Science and Technology Award. And again, this is a very important priority field for Mexico, the science and technology. So there are up to 6 grants, and it's research, teaching, or a combination of both, 3 to 9 months. And it's all STEM disciplines, so anything science, technology, engineering, and math, and anything in between that would fall into the STEM category. It's important to note that medical sciences that do not include patient contact will be considered, but you may not go abroad and conduct medicine. Public policy and health initiatives are also considered priority areas of interest, so that would fall under this category. Intermediate Spanish is required, and a letter of invitation is strongly preferred, but it's not required at the time of application. You can have it secured and submitted should you be selected, so by the grant start date. But it's always better to have it at the time of application if possible.
It can be helpful in any of these cases where it's only required at the time of grant. If you have an email communication where you're working on getting it, do include that in your application because that's helpful to peer reviewers when they're assessing your application.
And then for the science and technology, Intermediate Spanish is required. If you have any questions about whether you're working on it or your proficiency level, definitely reach out to us and we can talk a little bit more about if your level would be adequate for this award. So the next one is the Social Sciences and Humanities Award. This one has also up to 6 grants. It's a combination or research only or teaching only, all science. Social science and humanities fields are accepted, but Mexico does now have a preference for economics, law, political science, public administration, and urban planning. It's 3 to 9 months, and intermediate Spanish is required, and again, a letter of invitation is strongly preferred, but not required at the time of application. And like Hillary mentioned, an email or any correspondence that you are working on an affiliation and a relationship with a host institution is very helpful. And then we have the Teaching English as a Foreign Language grant. This is a TOEFL award that I showed you when I did the demo of the catalog of awards. So this one is up to 5 grants. It's teaching only or teaching and research. So there's no research only component here. It is 3 to 9 months. Though Mexico notes that 9-month proposals are preferred for a full academic year. And it's important to note here that the main purpose of this grant is capacity building of English language programs in Mexican institutions. So the award is going to be focused on TEFL, linguistics, education, other related specializations. And you'll be working on or with or teaching directly on English teachers in Mexico, so fluent or very advanced Spanish is required. Another important thing is that this is also a placed program, so you should not be seeking a letter of invitation for this award. Mexico will, you can list your preferences if you would like, but no connection is necessary prior, and Mexico will be making the final decision in terms of the highest need in the country for the TEFL award. And for this award, another important thing to consider is that you don't need to have a PhD for this award. They'll accept a master's degree with about 5 years experience teaching or in any of the relevant fields. Then we have this other very unique award, that's the Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies. This is a multi-country award. And so what this means is that you can spend between 4 and 10 months conducting research between Canada and Mexico. And so the award is to enhance collaboration between leading North American scholars working on projects that are of importance to Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So anything that's really relevant to our trilateral relationship or is shaped by our trilateral relationship. There's a wide variety of specializations available, but Mexico does note our preference for area studies, economics, environmental science as well, political science, etc. You can find the full list on the catalog of awards. There is a letter of invitation that is required for both Canada and Mexico. For Mexico, intermediate Spanish is required, and for Anglophone Canada, English will be sufficient, though if you are proposing to go to Francophone Canada, you'll need the commensurate French proficiency as well. So it's a very unique award, it's very cool, and you can go to both countries over the grant period. So that's it for the full deep dive of all of the awards. You can find a little bit of a snapshot, but again, we encourage you to go to the catalog of awards and really read through each of the awards that appeal to you, that fit your profile, for all of the details. And if you have any questions about those, we do encourage you to reach out to myself and to the team, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks, Angelica. So just to talk about a couple of important considerations for Mexico, we've talked a lot about language. The requirements vary by the award, as Angelica has noted. You'll need to do both a self-evaluation and then have a qualified language evaluator complete a formal language evaluation as a part of your application. That can be someone on your campus, someone in your community who is an accredited teacher. In Mexico, there is a travel warning from the U.S. Department of State. It is the only travel warning that is broken out by Mexican state. And typically, travel to states where it says to defer non-essential travel or travel is advised against. If it's a level 3, you should write to us to see if your travel may be considered in that state. If it's a level 4, typically placement there will not be allowed. All final placements have to be signed off on by the U.S. Embassy in Mexico for security purposes. So that's updated every so often. We encourage you before applying to consult the travel warning link and take a look at what the level is in the area of your interest. One other note before moving on to the regional travel award is that typically in Mexico there is a preference for awards with longer duration. You'll see that many of the awards are 3 to 9 months. And our colleagues in Mexico are really looking for a commitment from scholars. So if you have the ability to go for 9 months, that's fantastic. And there is a preference for longer participation. one great benefit for all of our core scholars who are not going to be on flex grants, and that's not allowed in Mexico, so you don't have to worry about that. But during your grant period, you can apply to go on a regional travel award to engage in short-term lecturing in another country in which the Fulbright program is active. Each year we have a good-sized group of scholars that participate in this and go to provide lectures at different classrooms or work with colleagues. The RTP, as we call it, does not cover research in another country, and it is a cost-share program. So the regional travel program will cover travel to and from the destination, but we encourage lodging to be offered by the host institution. You don't need to indicate this in your application, but apply for it after selected for the award. It is a nice little extra benefit there.
So this next slide just goes over all of the application resources that we have for you. All of this is on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program website, and these are all linked here. You'll also receive all of this information in an email a few days after this webinar is recorded, along with the recorded webinar. So all of this is here for you, but again, I would like to just quickly demo so that you know where to find it. And so that you can really maximize your use of the application resources. So if you give me one moment, I will switch over my screen and show you what the...
And while Angelica's looking for this, I encourage you to take advantage of these resources. They're very comprehensive and answer almost any question that you could possibly have about the Fulbright application. We include helpful tips and tricks for when you're writing your personal statement, which I'll talk about in a little bit, and guidelines for submitting your CV, your syllabi, letters of invitation, etc. So these are really useful resources, and we want you to take advantage of them because we want you to have the most competitive application possible.
Perfect. Thank you. So here we are, CIES.org. This is the main website. You can go to many different sections here. I'm going to go into this Explore the U.S. Scholar Program tab. So here we have the main overview of the U.S. Scholar Program. We have several tabs here. So I'm going to go into the Application tab, and you'll see here that we have more information, and then there are links to the online application, instructions, requirements, everything that you need. And then it's also broken down whether you're applying to a research, only a teaching only, or a combination of these types, and so the requirements for each. So this is a really comprehensive site that we put together for you to help you craft the best possible and most competitive application. And again, you'll receive this PowerPoint with all of the links in it, so you'll have access to that. So switching over my screen here. And then finally, there's the Fulbright Scholar blog for you to get a little bit more personal stories from alumni that have been Fulbright Scholars overall. And then there's also the My Fulbright. These are just different ways for you to connect.
As we get closer to the application deadline, there will be a series of webinars where they can cover things about crafting a good project statement and then really just any Q&A that you may have. So I encourage you to check back often for those. So I just wanted to talk briefly about the application components. We are using a new application system this year. So if you've been a Fulbrighter in the past, you may notice that difference. You will need to submit a project statement between 3 and 5 pages, focusing really on what you intend to do. You will also need to submit a CV, no longer than 6 pages. We know that you have a lot of wonderful accomplishments, but we have volunteer peer reviewers who are reading through a lot of these applications. We ask you to cut it down to what you think is the most relevant. You will also need to submit 3 letters of recommendation. We recommend that at least 1 be from your home institution and at least 1 be from outside of your home institution. Additional components that may depend bearing on the award, if you are doing a teaching or teaching research award, we ask that you submit at least 2 syllabi totaling no more than 10 pages so that we can get a flavor of what your teaching style is like. We also ask that you submit a bibliography if you're applying for a research award so we can see what you plan to draw on when you are working on your project. And then if required, in the case of Mexico, in most cases it is, the language proficiency report, letter of invitation is necessary. And then for those of you who may be in the more creative fields, we may ask you to upload some additional information. So the project statement, as I mentioned before, is really for you to focus on what you're going to do. There are a number of guiding questions in the application resources that Angelica shared with you earlier that I encourage you to read through before writing your project statement. It's really important to focus on what you plan to do, how you plan to make any adaptations for cultural changes, and what outcomes you're looking for. Fulbright is not only an academic exchange, but it's a cultural exchange. So we're looking to get a sense of how adaptable you're going to be. So if you plan to do X, but Y happens, what's your Z plan?
So here is a little bit of information about affiliations and invitations. If a letter of invitation is not required, that means that it's a place program that a host is identified, it will be found under the location subheading in the catalog of awards. And so that, for example, in the U.S. Studies award, it gave the option of 4 host institutions that you would be placed at. When a host is not identified, there are several resources to help find an affiliation. So we recommend that you utilize the international office on your campus to see if anybody has any connections. Using the U.S. and visiting Fulbright Scholar Directory. This is linked here. And this can help you search by people in your field, other academics that went to the same host country, in the same region, et cetera, and kind of making connection through the common Fulbright experience. We also suggest that you review the award description for suggested hosts or resources. Oftentimes, the catalog of awards will have some recommendations for people, specific individuals to reach out to, or specific host institutions that would be interested, but you are still required to submit a letter of invitation. A letter of invitation is a non-binding expression of interest from the proposed host abroad. So this should come from the person with whom you will be collaborating, and it should be on host institution letterhead. And so for the awards that don't require a letter of invitation at the time of application, you will still need to submit one should you be selected by the time your grant starts.
So again, this really goes back to some of the resources that Angelica has showed you. But these are just a few of the things that you should think about when submitting a competitive application. And one thing that I'll say, because I want to leave plenty of time for questions and answers, is when you're thinking about a Fulbright program, think about how your program is going to have an impact beyond just you and your host institution, your immediate collaborators. Is it going to affect your community, your students, your field because of a new discovery or a new research product? It's really important to think about what we call the multiplier effect.
All right, and then the last thing that we want to know before the question and answer section, these are just some ways to stay connected to the Fulbright Scholar Program. Like I said, visit our website, email us with any questions or concerns that you may have, join my Fulbright. We are on all of the social media, so follow us there. And then there is a referral initiative in which you can literally put your colleague's name, email, and we'll reach out to them if you think they would be wonderful Fulbright candidates. So at this time, we will open it for questions. Let me see that we have some in the chat box.
So there was a question early on about previous Fulbright. Someone had had a previous Fulbright to Columbia in the early aughts, and they wanted to know how that would affect their chances. Typically, we say that 10 years is sort of not a wave away period, but there is a preference for those that haven't had really recent Fulbrights. So if your Columbia Fulbright was, you know, 2001 to 2003, that likely wouldn't affect you. Great question. So this question here is, are there any professional project-oriented scholarships that you will cover? For example, the Fulbright Global Scholar. So project-oriented scholarships, I would refer you to those awards that don't require a PhD necessarily. So in the case of Mexico, the best one to look at is CHAPEL. If you're interested in the Global Scholar Award, that tends to be quite, I don't want to say competitive, but have a lot of interest, I would encourage you to consult our website or our other webinars. Thank you. The next question, for institutions in Mexico that are hosting for the first time, what is the best way to establish whether the associated institution is eligible? Whom do we contact to validate? So that's a great question. If the institution that you're interested in working with hasn't hosted a Fulbrighter in the past and you're not sure if they're eligible, typically the awards will say any accredited higher institution, higher education institution. I'd encourage you to make sure that they're accredited, but you can also consult with the Fulbright Commission in Mexico called COMEXIS. The contact information for the U.S. Scholar Program Officer is available on our awards pages, and you can always reach out to him to determine if a particular host institution might be appropriate. There is a related question of who at the Mexican institution should issue the letter of invitation. It should be from your collaborator, but we understand that in some countries, your collaborator may not have the authority to write the letter of invitation. It may need to come from a dean or a vice president, and in that case, that's fine. But for Fulbright purposes, we encourage it to come from who you'll be collaborating with. Thank you. So there's a question about the language requirement and if it's imposed for all awards, including those that are not country-specific. So again, we encourage you to consult the catalog of awards. Every single catalog of award description will have what, if any, language requirements there are. So the next question, if the focus of the TEFL awards is to build English language programs, why does it require fluent Spanish? So in the case of the TEFL award, while you may be working with some institutions that are pedagogical institutions training or teacher training schools, you may also be interacting with local public education officials in your area, depending on where you are placed. So the reason that we encourage a higher level of Spanish in that area is it's very possible that you may be working with collaborators who have limited English outside of the classroom in order to really fulfill that project. Our colleagues in Mexico are the ones who set these requirements, and they really do try to be quite thoughtful about language requirements because we want as many people to be eligible as possible, but we also don't want to lower the requirements to a place where prospective Fulbrighters wouldn't be successful. So we have a question here about if the focus of the award is in medicine or in nursing education, whether that scholar would be able to teach students in the clinical setting but not practicing. Yes, absolutely. We have had nursing instructors in the past. If you're in a classroom environment, that's absolutely fine. Neither you as the Fulbrighter can have any clinical contact with a patient or practice on a patient, nor can you supervise clinical contact, though. But if you're teaching like a nursing ethics class or a gerontology class, and then your collaborators are teaching the lab-based component, that's absolutely appropriate. Thank you.
Here we have a general question about statistics, about the success rate for applications. And we do not release statistics or numbers related to the application, but in general, it is very competitive.
So I would say that, yeah, so Fulbright is looking for, you know, strong academic and professional performance. But I would say that we really do encourage you to throw your hat in the ring. I hear from a lot of Fulbrighters that they never thought that they would be getting a Fulbright and that it would only go to Ivy League institutions. And while we have institutions from the Ivy League, very prestigious institutions that are Fulbrighters, we also have community college professors. We have business professionals. This program is looking to select a diverse swath of participants from a number of institutions. So I encourage you to not be too considered with how many people are applying, but to instead focus on which awards might be the best fit for you. So if you're a TEFL professional and you are really interested in, I don't know, bilingual indigenous education, Mexico might make sense for you. But if you're a TEFL scholar who really only wants to do research in X area in, you know, a small town in, I don't know, Quintana Roo, because it's a place program and because it's teaching focused, then it may not be the best fit for you. So really think about it in that fashion.
Thank you. So we have just a few minutes left for a couple more questions. And we have one for Brian Arlan. From me, actually. Brian, if you're still there, would you be able to share one or two tips or recommendations for somebody considering Mexico?
Let me think. Tips or recommendations for
application
for
process?
Oh, application process. Yeah. Start early. So it's good that you're looking now. In particular, if you need to get those letters from an institution, that's something that takes a little bit of time. In terms of thinking about what you would do if you got the award as well, I keep thinking about the practical things. You know, I lived there for 6 months with no car, it depends on where you're living, but Uber is very well developed there, and there are other ways of getting around, and that kind of thing. In terms of application, just having a, you know, take the time to have other people review it as well before you submit it, so that you know you have the best possible application.
Great, thank you. Really
helpful. Mm-hmm. So, Brian, I just as a follow-up, when you wrote your project statement, did you just have colleagues in your field read it, like in ethnic studies or anthropology, or did you have folks from outside of your field read your project?
I talked with people from outside of my field, but I didn't have them read it. I just had a couple of people look it over for me. Actually, I did have one person look it over from who does work primarily in Mexico, and that was helpful. And talking with her, she gave me a better sense of the institutional landscape of Mexico as well. So if you have colleagues who do work in Mexico, seek them out and talk with them about where you might want to be placed, and those can be helpful conversations as well.
I think the reason I ask that is we get feedback sometimes from our peer reviewers, you know, where they may be doing a committee in anthropology or ethnic studies, but the project might be like hyper-specific to one group in one area, and a lot of the time in the project it will assume a lot of context that the reviewer may have. And so the feedback that we got from a lot of peer reviewers this year is that you shouldn't assume that people are going to know what you're talking about. So it needs to be specific enough so that people in your field will feel like you have a good grasp of the concept, but not too specific that you're really writing to an audience that may not understand your intention. I'm not sure if that made sense, but trying to make sure that everyone can understand what you propose to do. I like the idea of getting the perspective from Mexico, too, to make sure that it's going to be feasible there. That's a really good tip.
Thank you. So we had Another question here about whether you are allowed to apply for multiple countries or more than one award, and the answer is no. And Hillary earlier spoke to really crafting a proposal around a specific theme or topic, and so you can indicate whether you would be open to being selected for a different country or a different award, but that rarely happens. And so you have to choose one award and in one country and really apply there. And then somebody asked here about posting a presentation. Yes, you will all receive an email from our team with this presentation, a recording of it, and links to all of the resources that we have showed on this webinar today. So that you have access to everything, and we absolutely, of course, encourage you to contact us. We're more than happy to chat with you, talk about any decisions or questions that you may have. So we're just about at the 3 o'clock mark.
Should we answer one final question? So there's another question about clinical settings. If you are in a field such as psychology, social work, medicine, nursing, etc., where you may have patient contact, I'd like to encourage you to reach out to us via email. Our email is westhem@iie.org, and set up a time to speak so you can talk about what you're thinking about and try to determine whether or not there may be any issues with our Fulbright Scholar Board policies. So, we want to make sure that you're thinking about all of those things.
So that's the end of our webinar here. We really wanted to thank Brian for joining us and sharing his insight and application tips. This was super helpful, and again, we'll be posting this so that you can listen to it again later if you would like.
Thank you so much, and we hope to see your application in September.
Take care, everyone.
Yeah.